Today I would like to talk about a subject which is important to every one of us and always will be important. If you remember, there are six things in life which work together to create one's life. Health, personal growth, career, money, recreation, relationships. These six items are part of the circle of life, which are continuously moving in and out of our consciousness and perception and demanding our attention at different points in time. And it is important that we respect the needs or the demands or the opportunities presented in each of these elements of life. Now, we have discussed all of them as a whole in a previous seminar, which is available for downloading on harrymedia.net. But I wanted to focus on one of these aspects because of the importance that it has for us. Now, I've been having a recent discussion with some people about passion. Now, that word may be understood differently by different people, but its overall import is to speak about that desire you have, a very strong desire for a particular type of experience. In Sanskrit, we speak of the rajaguna, the characteristic way in which activities take place within this mode of passion. It refers to in any activity or any way in which we manifest ourselves, which is characterized by that intensity of creation, that intensity of experience. Now, when you speak in normal society, amongst people, and we use the words passion, mainly the first thing that comes to mind is sexual passion, sensuality, and things like this. Now, naturally, sensuality is a very much part of passion. It is the basis of it, of course. But you also have people who have a passion for a sport, a passion to ride horses, a passion to play football, a passion in art, a passion for politics, and a passion for making money. One may even say he's very passionate or she's very passionate about his or her art or his or her hobby. Now, these passions, they make up the motivating factor. We talked previously about why do anything. We spoke about the motivating factor. And in reality, the motivating factors are all connected to what makes us passionate about life. Now, it's very important, if not essential, for a living being to experience some passion in life. One has to feel some passion in life. Because without feeling some passion for life, one has no reason to live it. Now, a life without passion is a life not really worth living. And ultimately, it drags one down into some form of ignorance, which ultimately brings about some kind of destruction. One has to have a reason for existence. One has to have a motivating factor. That all depends on a passion for life. Some taste in life. Some reason to live it. Now, I meet people again and again who don't have a passion for life. There's nothing about life which inspires them. Now, you can inspire perhaps a certain portion of your life. You can focus in on some small area in your life and find some passion in that. That is not so difficult. Some people find passion in sexuality. Some people find passion in eating. They find a particular passionate connection to one of their senses, which they are very eager to enjoy. Now, at one point or another, we have all experienced a concentration or a focus on a specific sense and the passion that may come from it. Good music, a good beat, something which inspires us from within our energy to move in a very rhythmic way. It increases our passion for life. Or a beautiful landscape, or a beautiful view of the sea or of the mountains. Many times people who don't have a passion for life will find momentary passions which inspire them. Long-term passions are very difficult to come by. Short-term passions are much easier. Now, of course, if I were to change the words I use, we could be speaking about Shreyas and Preyas, those things which are beneficial over the long term and those things which are only beneficial in the short term. But I'm speaking about something which is, I think, more significant, about that passion to live, which gives me that very reason by which I may be concerned about what I do in the present moment. Now, I'm definitely not talking about having a long-term goal which therefore totally restricts and dominates the present moment and the short-term activities. I'm not talking about that. The very concept of crushing the inspiration, crushing the experiences of the present for the sake of the future is the typical post-dated check syndrome. Yet there are very good reasons why one would be careful about short-term activities for the sake of the long-term if you consider it from the point of view of passion. Now, certainly, it's a very interesting thing when you think about it, how the long-term passion affects the short-term of our life. Let's say I have no real long-term passion. In fact, the idea of living for a long time on a deep level is not attractive. It's something that seems to be the source of frustration or even something totally not wanted. Now, there are many people who feel like that. Many people who feel that life is a bad deal. Life is something which is just filled with problems. Life just is, it stinks. Now, of course, there are many reasons to think like that. One of them being that we get old and we die, we get diseased. There are, the global warming is increasing so that water levels are definitely increasing, and we're going to have rain disturbances, weather disturbances. These are serious problems. Economic problems, political problems, social problems, even problems in relationships where one becomes so frustrated. These are real serious problems. You can even feel, as I'm discussing these things, as I bring these things up, how your energy just starts to depress within yourself. You start to become depressed, and your enthusiasm just starts to just fade away. This is a natural consequence of hearing about all of the difficulties of life, because it just puts a lot of water on the fire of our long-term passion, our reason for living, our reason for existing. It's so interesting how the news always accents all these negative things so that one becomes very depressed. And when one becomes very depressed, one goes to the advertisers in between the news who are telling you to smoke more and drink more and eat more and go here and there and do this and that to overcome your depression by getting some passion in your life. So it's an intimate connection between what we are hearing from those who give us information and what we are supposed to buy according to those who are advertising. There's an intimate connection between the two. So we hear about how bad things are, we become depressed, and then we start taking up all these other short-term fulfillment of a particular passion items. And in this way, we're trying to counteract long-term ominous disaster with short-term enjoyment. This is a perfect formula for disaster. And in fact, when we see that it is a formula for disaster, it creates another market. the market for helping us solve all the problems we've created by acting in the wrong way in our past. Tons of health products, tons of healthy things to do, exercises to do, doctors to go see, treatments to take. So the long term very much affects the short term. And in fact, the short term very much affects the long term. These two things are intimately connected. You cannot say they do not connect. Now, I know somebody may be thinking, well, what are you talking about? In the past, you were telling us about how important the present was. And now you're speaking about the present linked with the future. Now, the next thing you're going to say is present linked with the past. Well, yeah, I am, because present is connected to the past. Present is also connected to the future. It all depends on how you see time. Now, obviously, you can think of time in terms of a continuum, or you can think of time in terms of one object, the present. Okay, when we say the present, that's a misnomer. Really, what we're saying is existence. We're talking about ever-present existence as a package. We're talking about a package of existence in which all aspects of our being, that being that has been in the past and still exists, that being which is being created in the future and which does exist now. Now, a seed is a very small thing. And one can say that there is a difference between a seed and a tree, because the seed is just small, the tree is just big. In reality, the difference between the two is time, but there's more to the reality of difference, because one has to be planted, cultivated, given a chance to grow, not cut down before it becomes big. Let's say I'm going to take that seed, and I'm the one who's going to manifest it into a tree. Now, there's a lot to that. I have to intend. I have to get the seed. I have to say, I intend that this seed shall grow into a tree. So I make a plan based on my intention that I'll find a place to put it. I'll put it there. I'll grow it. I'll care for it. And I won't disturb it. So because I've done all of that, and I've manifested the existence of that tree in my energy, I have actually embraced the future of that tree. And in my embrace of the tree and all of its time till its fruition and growth, I have now made the tree in its whole existence part of the present right now. Now see the power in that understanding. That is an example of a intended series of events that have created the future being bound with the present, the ever-existing present leading up to the fruition. Just consider the power in that. Now, let's consider unintended actions. Actions which are not consciously, with conviction and intention, created. They are absolutely as important, as significant, and as powerful as our intended planting of the tree leading up to the fruition and growth. Let's go back to the tree example again. The long-term motivation, the long-term passion for that action is to see the tree in its full growth. The short-term consequences are the care of the seed, the care of the seedling, the protection and nurturing of the tree. Let's take another example of unintended in the same sense. Unintended consequences, which create just as powerful results and which we all are living with whether we like it or not. I don't have a long term in this example. Passion for life. I see no reason to live. I see no future. I see no good coming out of this. I don't want to get into a long conversation about why we feel like that. You all know it very well. We live with it every day. I'm not good enough. I can never be the person others wish me to be, or I've been told I should be. I am bad, I am evil, I am stupid, foolish, wrong, blah, 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 fill in all the spaces. We are very familiar with these thoughts. Or we see only disasters in the world, we see only evil in the world, we see only bad wherever we look. Again, offset with moments of passion, focused or concentrated on some particular sense or some particular experience, which contrasts that long-term feeling in one sense. And yet, does it? Let's go through this example and find out how we embrace the future right now, how our past, present, future are one in our energy. So somebody with such a negative understanding of the future, this will create a lack of passion, of motivation for the present. The tree doesn't exist in the future, therefore the seed does not exist in the present. So, because one doesn't see the future, doesn't want the future, one works on the subconscious level to make one's life shorter, make things deteriorate, to exit from this world. One who smokes, for instance, knows that mainly people get lung cancer, but when one has that understanding that that's not a bad thing because I will exit, one continues. Same with drinking too much, same with drugs, same with any unhealthy activity. Now, I have an aunt who's 89 years old. She's the head of the family. She is the matriarch of all the Campagnolas today. I can guarantee and verify she does not live according to any principles that you would ordinarily consider to be healthy. Absolutely fabulous cook, would cook everything, eat everything, didn't matter what you drink with it, lifestyle, just anything, just living life to the fullest according to her conception. She had ups, she had downs, problems, troubles, difficulties, still has them, but she's 89 and going strong. Now why? Why is this? Why also Winston Churchill, who ate the worst foods, smoked the biggest cigars, drank like a fish, did everything wrong? Why these people become ancient? I'll tell you why. Because they have a passion for life. They were passionate for living, for experiencing, and they felt it was their right, it was their requirement, it was their lust to live. And all those people who have this desire to kill themselves, amongst them, there are many who are very afraid of their desire. So they do all kinds of healthy things all the time, tightly restricting everything in health because they know they really want to kill themselves. So they're trying to do everything they can to prevent that. Isn't that amazing? How the long-term desire to kill oneself, even when the short-term actions are there to totally negate the long-term desire, how it's still intimately connected. How our energy at the present reaches out to the future and embraces it in one compact embrace. And why is this? Because when we go back to the past and embrace our past, it is also a significant, major, fundamental foundation upon which the present rests. Because those people in the past who've had all these negative experiences have suffered so much in negative actions or things that have happened to them in the past, that's created this reason for seeing no reason to exist. So all those people who have this no hope idea, no hope, that used to be one of the slogans of the punk generation, no hope, there's no hope. Therefore, it just creates either a rapid movement towards destruction or a hesitating movement towards destruction. It's compared to the person who's running off the cliff with great enthusiasm and as compared to the person who's going, no, I don't want to go, I don't want to go off the cliff, I don't want to go, I'm falling. And then there are those people who just love life. So, this passion for life, this is the whole key. It's the driving factor. And you can kill yourself because of lack of it, or you can live forever because of having a flowing abundance of it. Now, I cannot give you an easy formula on how to deal with this situation if you are somebody who's got a negative outlook. You know, the chronic disease, chronic sickness takes years and years and years to manifest, and it takes years and years and years to reduce. There's no quick fix. There's no easy way out. One has to transform on a very fundamental level. I speak about this, and I've been concentrating on this subject now over the last few weeks because it has become very obvious to me that this is the basis upon which we all sit, we all work, we all live, and we all die. And I think it's very, very important that we understand how time is not a separated thing, that it's separated moments or separated portions of time. It is always compact right now in ever existence. I think those who have a very deep understanding, deep energetic realization of this, and are very powerful in their mystic capacities, can reach anywhere they want within time. I've seen that when we do that exercise where we X out and fade away things in our past that we don't want to be there. Because we have that capacity to reach anywhere within our energy field, which is now stretched all over the place, to manipulate it, to modify it. And we've seen also how people have such great capacities to influence anything around them by making a very deep and fundamental transformation in their psyche, in their spiritual psychic energy. How you can attract such good energy to yourself by just simply being a magnet for it, by having it just everywhere, permeating your whole existence. Now, okay, somebody may, and I know that this is a little unfair of me in one sense to just make it seem as if the persons who think like this, they have problems, they are disturbed, they are somehow or another not as superior as those who have the lust for life. I'm sorry, that is not my intention and is also not true. I don't believe that one is superior to the other in some absolute sense. And yet, wouldn't we feel better with such a passion for having all good in our life than when we have the passion or lack of it and attract all negative things in our life? And yet some people need to go through this experience of how they are partners in the creation of that which was within their time. People have to go through this to see what they are creating, their power, to see their power, to regain their power. I've seen mainly people don't respect their own power because they're not even aware of it. Therefore, there's so many discussions about disempowering yourself by certain actions and empowering yourself by certain ways of thinking. Some of us actually have to discover our own power by seeing our own capacity to ruin our lives. But we are so expert at avoiding this that even when we're very clearly seeing the effect on our lives, we then take shelter of words like, oh, I'm a victim. Oh, they did this to me. It's their fault and their fault and their fault. And they try to avoid at all costs the fact that, hey, I embraced that which created that situation. It's only me who's the one who created it. They try to avoid that. And sometimes it takes a long time of suffering in this way, a lot of work and suffering in this way, to come to understand your own power of creating even this miserable situation in your life. And then one just simply looks at it, drops it on the ground like some garbage and says, this is awful, forget it, and walks in the other direction. A life-changing, a life-transforming realization, a life-transforming light bulb on top of the head all of a sudden goes click, and one goes, whoa, wow, that is amazing. It is amazing the power I have. It is amazing the power I gave away. It is amazing the power I wasted. I have seen over and over again how people give away their power to others, thinking that they're supposed to do it. I think it comes from when we're children, this idea that we're always looking for somebody to approve what we do and grant us power to do it. Very deeply within our hearts, very deeply within our psyche, we have this idea that mommy and daddy have to empower us, have to appreciate us, have to acknowledge us, have to encourage us. And therefore, there are many elements of society which reproduce this, where you enter into a society, become recognized, you enter into a profession, get licensed, you get recognized by the government or some military or by your friends, or there's recognition, appreciation, acknowledgement, just like when we were children. And as we're running through life, reaching out for, searching for all of this certification of our life and approval and sanction, we are giving away our power to all kinds of agencies until we are totally controlled. And as many times as we give away our power, there are people who are trying to take from us our power to expand their own power. In that way, we acknowledge, certify, and support them. We become powerful when we take power from others and others admit, they acknowledge, you are powerful. I will ask you. I will get your permission. And in this way, they are eating away our power. They are nourishing themselves on our power. And at one point, you wake up to all this and you say, no, no, sorry, I don't do that anymore. All of these things that we have been doing through these past 2 years now of our public discussions, our public broadcasts, our public understanding of how we're going to manifest ourselves has been meant to establish ourselves in a very positive, long-term sense, short-term sense, and empower ourselves to live our lives. Now, we know very well that we are part of the divine energy. We are part of God. We have that quality. We are divinity in ourselves. We are divine beings. We know this, theoretically. But when we look in the mirror in our eyes directly, and can we say, I love you? Can we say, I love the divinity? We love the divine within? No, because we don't see ourselves like that. We think ourselves like that, but we don't see ourselves like that. So we spent a lot of time discussing about why we see ourselves in that negative way. And we've discussed about what we really are. We've done these meditations to discover what we really are. The vast majority of people who do the I Am meditation find that the divinity is there, their energy is there, that beautiful effulgence of spiritual energy all around them is the core of their being. Do the I Am meditation. Right afterwards, Look in the mirror. You'll see totally differently. But when you move outside of yourself, when you move outside of yourself into the exterior, then all this negative conception starts to come and we embrace it because we're looking for sanction, we're looking for affirmation, we're looking for acknowledgement from outside. And then all that beauty that we are becomes covered with a wet blanket. I'm not saying don't care about the exterior. I'm not saying don't care about what people think. I'm not saying don't care about anything. But what I am saying is don't define yourselves based on that which is outside of you. Because you are already defined as divine. You don't need to define yourself. You are already defined. You just have to see it, feel it, understand it, accept it. But we are like an onion. The core, onion, bad example in the sense that onion doesn't have a sweet core. But anyway, we are that beautiful personality surrounded by these layers and layers and layers of external things which we have embraced but which have been put on us from external forces. And we have also based our conception on ourselves and what we have done in the past, as if we were bad when we did it, even though in reality, when we did things, we thought this was the best thing to do. It's not that the evil person goes out seeking to do evil because the evil person knows it's wrong. It's wrong for them to do it. They don't go out with that intention. They think, hey, that's perfect for me to do evil. That's perfect for me to do. It's the right thing for me to do. Anyway, we've discussed all these points. These are very long discussions, very complex discussions. And yet in reality, they are all part of that layer and layer and layer of misconception, which separates us from that divinity we are. Now, one may say, what is the motivation for all this? After all, isn't the motivation just to go back to God or do something spiritual so we don't have to suffer in this material world, etc., etc.? I don't like to phrase it like that. I don't like to say it like that. I don't think that really expresses spirituality properly. I see embracing our divinity now because that includes the future, it includes the past. It embraces our energetic time bubble, which is all around us. It's another way of looking at the same thing. Consider the example of the seed and the tree that we gave before, how we have the intention to plant the seed, we nurture the seed, we cultivate it, we protect it, and it grows gradually in time. When that is there in our manifested present consciousness, we are embracing the whole pathway to the seed and tree. We are embracing the future. It exists with us right now. So consider, I'm here now in this spot. Even if I think I have to go somewhere in the future, I have to make steps, do things, get to the divine beings, Radha and Krishna, for instance, to embrace them. I have to go from here to there. But still, within this understanding of time, when you create the whole pathway there, you are there now. It is compact with you right now. It is possible right now. And therefore, I say, right now, here within your energy, you can reach within to the divine. You can reach out to the divine. You can embrace the divine and experience it right now, right here. You can experience it. You can love it. You can embrace it. You can feel it now. If in the spiritual realm, it is ever-present existence. If I am this divine spiritual energy, then within me is the ever-present existence. And when my awareness of that existence expands by my looking for it, I will find that ever-present existent connection with the divine, with all the beings of the spiritual realm, all the beings who are there, all around me now who are of the spiritual realm. It will just be such a beautiful connection. So you're looking for passion. In life, that's the passion. To have that long-term, short-term, present, past short-term, past long-term, all compact in the ever-present reality of the experience of spirituality. Now, I know those who don't have such an experience will think, this sounds nice, maybe it's just word jugglery, maybe it's just some kind of speculation, or someone may even say, this is totally off the wall, because they haven't experienced it. But when you are within, when you have experienced it, you will understand it is there. You can just reach to it as you like. Someone may object, yeah, but I can't go there. I can't be there. I'm here with this. That's the problem. Get it? Yes, and if you embrace that as a problem, if you embrace that as the frustrating aspect, if you embrace that as the obstacle, if you embrace that as the thing that is between you and God, then you'll create this marvelous exit strategy because you are negating your life. And just as you, as anybody who may be passionate for eating or may be passionate for sex, who may be passionate for art, who may be passionate for sport, be passionate for the spiritual experience. Reach out for it, embrace it, bring it in. Expand your experience of it right now. Don't consider this body as an obstacle. Sit in the meditative activity of embracing the energy of the all-present existence. You will find it is very, shall we say, cleansing, relieving. It completely gives us everything we need to move through our existence with harmony, with love, with passion that expands, not contracts. So I think this is a marvelous inspiration, a marvelous way of seeing something which previously we thought was a problem, and now we understand is a potential for solution. It's just the way you see it and just the way you choose to deal with it. That's all. So you have to choose. You have to come to your own understanding of when, how, why you do anything. No one can force you. I just have this passion that builds up Saturday morning to share with you some passion. This passion which leads to awareness, not to destruction. I've got a question here which I think I'd like to answer, even though it's going to be very difficult to answer. It has two parts. The first question is, can one be passionate in austerity? And then the second part is it better to be really passionate in sensual things than not to be passionate even sensually or in spiritual things? Now, I think that the reason why I find personally, I mean, I don't know about you, but I find it personally difficult to answer these questions is the usage of the words. So maybe it'll help me and it might help anyone else if we were to discuss a little about the words that are used in this question. Now, when we speak about passion, it's not necessarily connected with the word determination, because if you wanted to talk about being determined in the sense of austerities or being dedicated or being very strong or with great intention performing something, you would use those words. Let's take, for example, an artist. I just like to use this example to help explain the differences between skill and dedication and practice and experience as compared to passion. Yeah, an artist, yeah. Any kind of artist, sculptor, painter, whatever. Now, I know it's kind of like obvious, but it needs to be said. For example, I can study painting. I can practice it. I can be very determined to learn how to draw, which is the basis of painting anyway. And I can do it and maybe think I'm doing it to sell, to make money, to earn my living. In other words, I have a reason for doing it. That reason is connected with my livelihood. That reason is connected with my activity, just the need to have activity that earns money or something I wish to do like that. That's not passion. The same goes for music. Like right now, I don't really have any passion to make music, so I don't do it. Passion means there's a burning need, desire, force for creation, for creativity, for the artist to express themselves, for expression in a unique, magnificent way. Doesn't care really whether or not you appreciate it or it's purchased or it's a part of the livelihood. One is very passionate about the art. So passion is very different than discipline or determination or force or whatever. Okay, from that point of view, if you ask me, can you be passionate about austerity? I don't think so. Now, you might define it differently. You might put it in different terms, and maybe it could fit in. For example, a masochist might be very passionate about austerity. But, you know, it's just a question of understanding what we mean by passion, and that's very important to understand what we mean by passion, because when we speak about a passion for life, we're talking about that real passion, not just a discipline or some goal or some vision. We're talking about the passion to live life. Okay, so let's move to the next part of this, which is it better to experience passion, just to have that experience of passion, to have that feeling, and then not to have it, yet to be interested in spirituality, devoid of all passion? Very difficult to answer that question. Not because it's a difficult question to answer. It's an easy question to answer. It's difficult because each person will approach that question in a very unique way, considering where they are in their evolutionary process. Let's take Arjuna. Arjuna was a warrior. He was very passionate about his warrior life. He was passionate about life in general. He had that taste for life, yet he was a great spiritualist. Maybe some other yogi, one who lives in the forest, meditating under a tree or in a cave, doesn't have such a passion. Now, how do you deal with that? There's only one way to deal with it, because you can only think about it in terms of the individual. Each individual has their particular way of manifesting their energy, their passion for life, or what they see is the greatest manifestation of their spiritual energy. Because each individual has a different way of approaching this passion of life. Yet, and this is a big yet with huge capital letters and underlined in bold, let's say there's somebody who is wishing themselves to be a spiritualist, is liking to identify themselves as a spiritualist, and voiding out all passion in every single aspect of life in the idea of manifesting their goal. But they are not tasting, they are not experiencing that capacity to reach out in interdimensional space to the contact of the experience of their spiritual desires, their spiritual ideals. Whereas in actuality, they are trying to cool off their lives in the name of spirituality, yet they are not experiencing the spirituality. Now, don't get me wrong. They are, of course, performing spiritual activities, doing spiritual disciplines. they are engaging themselves in all of the steps that they feel will bring them there. It's not like they have no contact with spirituality. However, they're not getting that experience, that taste, which they really are looking for. It might be better, and notice I use the word might. It might be better in that case for such a person to allow their life to manifest with some passion for life and seeing spirituality as integrated within that instead of trying to put ice cubes on their life and allowing the spirituality to manifest. After all, when we think about, this is not a linear analogy. I'm not trying to make it a linear analogy, but I just want you to think about that. The whole taste of the pastimes of Radha and Krishna, of the gopis, etc. There's that passion in it. And the idea of putting ice cubes on oneself to reach that passion is not applicable at all stages in spiritual development. Don't forget, we're not defining passion as sexuality or even sensuality. We're defining it in a broader way. Yet, these things are part of it, and you can't deny that. Now, the question is really basically at the bottom line, is it better to be passionate at all than to never be passionate in anything? You've ever heard the saying, it is better to have loved and lost than to have never loved at all? Well, that it all depends on you. I can't make some kind of a statement which will apply to everybody. I can't answer that question in such a way that it will be a generic answer that everybody can take. I can tell you how I feel. I feel that life must have intensity. Life must have passion to it. Otherwise, I see no reason for it. That's how I feel. Now, that doesn't mean I'll always feel like that. Maybe sometimes I'll like to be sitting in the refrigerator. Maybe I will change. Maybe I will transform. But I feel like that now. And to take me, who feels like that now, and put me in a refrigerator is not going to work. And I would answer the question in my case that yes, it's better to be really passionate, even in sensual things, than not to have any passion at all. Yes, for me. I would suppose it's a kind of establishment of balance that we can live with, and yet someone else may not find the same answer works for them. So it's not a generic, universal answer. It's just how I feel. And then the same person is putting another question, is it better to feel real emotions than to have no emotions, not even material, sensually, or spiritually? Because isn't the point of life the emotion, the feeling of the emotion? Okay, you can say emotion, I say feeling experiences, the intensity of experiences. You can use the word emotion, whatever you like, it doesn't matter. But as far as I understand, these experiences, these emotions, these connections with the feelings, which are part of my spirituality, intrinsically part of my spirituality, the expression of it, are essential. And if a person doesn't feel, a person has no connection to emotions, I don't think they're closer to spirituality. I don't think that detachment brings them closer. It's just a way to calm down to the point where they can actually understand their spirituality in the proper way. So I hope that this somehow or another deals with the question. I got a really nice question here from St. Petersburg that in Walsh's books, there is a discussion about a master, the master level, where a master can instantaneously create reality. Now, they want to know how I would describe that master level in the context of today's discussion. Well, thank you for the question, because that's exactly what I was talking about in today's discussion. I was talking about mastery of time, mastery of the matrix, if you wish. The only thing which separates us from that mastery, the only thing which separates us from that capacity to create or interact with reality in the way we wish to do so is our conception of time, our conception of our energy interacting with time. Of course, you could use it in terms of time, you can do it in terms of space, you can use it in terms of energy. These things interact in the mystic level. For example, let's say I want to have a pile of earth in front of me. On the master level, on the level of regular persons, you have the place where there's no earth, you have the act of deciding to do so, to finding the shovel, go getting the shovel, bringing the shovel to where earth is, digging with the shovel, carrying it to the place and dumping it on the spot. You have these steps that have to take place in sequence. So the time is the time from the point of the intention to the dirt being on the ground. The space is that place within which this activity takes place, and the energy is the effort I have to expend to do all of that. So here's where it gets complicated. Part of that, all of that is something that I, the energy, move into. Keep that thought in mind, because it's the basis of the rest of this. What? I enter into it. For example, my feet walk, I use hand, I grab shovel, this object. I walk, I go to earth, I put shovel into earth, and then do something. I'm entering into the shovel by holding it into the earth with the shovel and walking. It's a question of entering with my energy. Now, in reality, from the master level we're talking, the hands, the feet, the body is as much not me as the shovel in the sense of energetic identity. Yet, from the master level, it is not that we see these things as separate from me. We see these things as ways in which my energy can flow. I hope you catch that difference. One can see it from the point of view of separation. One can see it from the point of view of connection. The body, the shovel, the earth, they're all not me, right? Or you can see I enter through the body, out from the body, into the shovel, into the earth, into the atmosphere around. My energy can flow anywhere. What can stop it? Two ways of seeing. This is the secret basis of all mystic power. That's why I'm not very interested in talking about differences. It's not the differences that matter. It's the similarities that matter. Now, somebody may object, rightfully so, from a certain point of view, that a body is organic matter. The body is meant to respond somehow or another to my energy. Okay, why not? Let's take that argument. But then what would stop me, same argument, from expanding my energy to another organic being and let it respond to me? We're not talking about leaving this organic form and entering into another organic form, although that's also possible theoretically, and it has been done. But I'm talking about expanding the energy. Healing is also a mystic capacity because it works exactly on that basis. The healer's energy enters within the organic field of the organic form of the person to be healed. The energetic fields become one during the healing for the sake of the person. Yet without the intention to take upon one's own physical form or etheric form the problems of the other organic form. So one can do this by just simply making the energies together, by expanding. You see, healers either work by expanding their energy field over the person to be healed, or bringing the person to be healed within their energy field. It's all a question of sending your energy into a new circumstance. Now, when Uri Geller, the famous Israeli guy, he's from Russia actually, his brother Ari still lives in Russia. So when he bends spoons, this is exactly what he does, but not with an organic material, it's with an inorganic material. Me personally, I have no interest in working with inorganic materials. If I'm going to take my energy or whatever and concentrate it, I'd rather do it for the sake of a person. But that's neither here nor there in this conversation. I've even seen a person who makes cigarettes fly through the air. But the same exact principle is what's used. You take your energy and it expand it into another thing by enveloping it, by focusing upon it, by concentrating it, and having your energetic hand manipulate it as this physical one would do it. Obviously, it's easier to speak about than it is to do it. But the master is a person who has mastered his own or her own energy, knows how to move it, how to project it. We all do it, but we don't do it with knowledge, with intention, with conscious awareness. That's the difference between us and the master. I'm having a very hard time continuing this discussion because I'm being told to stop. I'm revealing too many secrets, and I would step by step explain how you could do anything, and I'm being told to stop this. My mind has been totally confused. I'm not being allowed to continue. I'm really sorry. It's interesting. I mean, when I started this discussion, I was feeling badly about myself because I was saying, you know, I never talk about mystical things anymore, and that's what I really like. And here I am just talking about all this practical stuff all the time. So finally, I got the opportunity to sink my teeth into explaining the details, you know, step by step. I was going to do all kinds of further discussions, and then I had to just stop. I'm not frustrated about that because I know it's true. It's like, it's selfish of me. I enjoy sharing this, but it's not exactly right. Not right now. Yet, all the ingredients to build that mystic system have already been stated in this lecture and other lectures. And if you have that capacity to build it, you can do it. It's all there. There are so many, I'm sorry to say, people who just are not very smart in this world, who don't really know that goodness is not a problem. Goodness is the point. And they will use knowledge improperly. So one has to be careful. I know there's like this, the next question from St. Petersburg also is about this cryon. I get this question all the time. It's almost as if my lecture questions would not be complete without questions about cryon. And everybody in Russia is really into this because it's like really big over there. And it's funny, in America, it's very little. In other places, it's very little. It's mainly hitting big in Russia. I suppose these things really twang the psyche of the Russians very much. Okay, so DNA and activating it and building this grid around the earth and all these things. Okay, fine. It's great. It's wonderful. It's magnificent. Go for it. But you're not going to get details. No, from crayon. And I feel that we are allowed to give you pep talks. We are allowed to encourage. We are allowed to drop concepts. We are allowed to delineate principles. Because you've got to put it all together into the package that works for you. It's not like you've got to find a key, and there's one key. Everybody has the same key hidden in some etheric box that you take it, open the door. Not like that. But just like I said before, each and every one of us is a very unique energy and interaction between our energy and our world around us. Therefore, we all have to assemble the package for our own system. And if I were to have finished my discussion and give you the step-by-step, every little step of the way towards the mastery, it would ruin the creation of the package within you, and it would also be the wrong time, because time is involved. I'm sitting here feeling upset, so don't mind me for a second. I like to think of me as this guy who can talk about anything, can say anything, you know. It's just all pouring out of my head in this creative, passionate experience of Saturday. It's not so. Every now and then the brakes are put on. Hold on, buddy. That's it right there. And then I say, damn, you mean I'm not the creator of this Saturday broadcast passion? Oh. So there you have it. Think about it as you like.